Hi, this is Suzanne Gowardy, the General Manager of the IE America Radio Network, wishing you and yours a safe and happy holiday.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
Howard Dean punched back Sunday at his Democratic rivals who have been stepping up their attacks on the former Vermont governor. At a high school, Dean amplified on a comment he made that the nation was not safer after the capture of Saddam Hussein, a remark criticized by his rivals. Dean said America is still not safer because the Bush administration is lacking an inspection program for cargo, missed an opportunity to buy enriched uranium stockpiles of former Soviet states, and allowed North Korea to become a nuclear power. Dean said the raising of the threat level to orange on Sunday proved his point. The capture of Saddam Hussein had a minimal effect on George W. Bush's approval ratings, which are hovering at their lowest levels since he took office in January 2001, according to a poll. The Harris poll, conducted before and after the ousted Iraqi leader's capture on December 13th, found only a slight improvement in Bush's ratings, up from 48% positive, 51% negative, to 50% positive, 49% negative. They were the worst monthly ratings Harris has reported for the president since the September 11th terrorist attacks of 2 years ago, and the highest negative rating since he took office. Authorities raised the terrorist threat assessment over the weekend after some new intelligence indicated that operatives of Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda terror network, possibly trained and licensed to fly passenger jets, may now be pilots for some foreign airlines, ideally positioning them to carry out suicide attacks, U.S. officials said on Monday. Reinforced cockpit doors intended to thwart hijackers after the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks would now protect any terrorist pilot at the controls, the officials said on condition of anonymity. Authorities would not describe the terror threats in detail publicly, but the U.S. officials claimed that the threat alert would remain at orange or high through the end of January, which they said was an indication of its seriousness. Officials insisted that new intelligence indicates that al-Qaeda remains intent on attacking large gatherings of people with chemical or biological weapons. They said law enforcement agencies were looking closely at two rural locations, one in the east and the other in the southwest, that were believed to be high on the terrorist target list. More news after this.
Our national parks have always been there for us, standing as silent reminders of who we are and what it means to be an American. They are full of history, of memories, of majesty. But now these great American treasures need our help. I'm Richard Dreyfuss, asking you to help preserve America's national parks. Visit AmericansForNationalParks.org today, because there's just too much to lose.
This is a public service announcement from Americans for National Parks and this radio station.
A Spanish nuclear power station has been shut down indefinitely because of a small missing screw weighing just 4 to 5 grams that fell off a machine during refueling. The Zurita plant, located in the central Castilla-La Mancha region, cannot reopen until a full report on the screw is completed. Staff searched for the screw with cameras, but after failing to locate it on film, they concluded it must have slipped into an area of the reactor that was inaccessible to cameras, the spokesman said. This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
This holiday, don't just give a gift, give the good life. And if you still haven't found the perfect gift, then come find it at Sears. Right now, get special savings on hundreds of gift ideas. All TVs, DVD players, and camcorders are on sale. And all fine jewelry is 40 to 60% off. Help him build the ultimate workshop with a great selection of Craftsman tools on sale. And with all treadmills on sale, start the new year off right. So come into Sears today. It's never too late to give the good life. Sears, good life, great price. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Find us online at Sears.com. Sale dates 12/21 through 12/24.
Ah, Tommy, we hardly knew ye. Tom Scully we're talking about. George W.'s hand-picked honcho of America's Medicare program. Tommy came into this position of public trust only a couple of years ago, and already he's on the move. He spent his short 2-year stint pushing for a massive overhaul of Medicare in a way that will add profits to private hospitals, HMOs, and the drug giants. Why are we not surprised? After all, prior to becoming a public servant, Scully had been head honcho for the Federation of American Hospitals, the lobbying front for the very same for-profit hospitals that his Medicare overhaul will benefit. Now, Tom's cashing out. Having been deeply involved in rewriting the Medicare law, He's been openly peddling his insider knowledge to assorted lobbying firms, dangling his government experience to draw a seven-figure salary as a lobbyist working for the private health care giants. As one of the lobbying firms said, Tom's recent experience at the highest levels of government makes him very attractive to our firm. Great. George W. gave us Scully, a former corporate lobbyist, to rewrite Medicare, thus giving Scully an advanced degree in corporate servitude so he can now command an even fatter salary as a corporate lobbyist. There's a Horatio Alger story for you. Worse, Scully had been out trolling for lobbying jobs while he was inside the back rooms negotiating the Medicare rewrite. Yet, he says this represents no conflict of interest, for he went to the agency's ethics officer and got a waiver to the ethics rules that other employees have to follow. Besides, he assures us, nobody has ever accused me of being other than honest. This is Jim Hightower saying, "Oh, Tommy, then let me be the first. Scully, you are a scuzz, a poster boy of the corrupt revolving door scam between government and corporate power that makes most Americans sick to our stomachs."
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
Well, the ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Conspiracy theorists are at it again. The latest suggestion that the terror alert that Bush has issued is a result of the disappointing economic numbers. And, after the fact, he'll be able to go back and blame it on the terror alert, which he can blame on the terrorists. And therefore, he has no responsibility for the economy. That's too far out for me. I'm sorry. I wouldn't put anything past these guys. They are so good at manipulating public opinion that you have 53% of the American public thinking that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11, and more than three quarters of those people thinking that on the airplanes that hit the World Trade Centers were Iraqis. I mean, that's how effective this administration has been. Every speech Bush has given since 9/11. In which he talks about Iraq, he also talks about 9/11, even though there's no relationship between the two. And so, yeah, they're very sophisticated. They're good at handling this stuff. But let's just assume that there actually is something to worry about, which then raises the question, you know, how is America going to react if there is a terrorist attack? If some, you know, God forbid, some terrible thing happens. And it makes me think about. I was in Lima, Peru once. We were putting together. Well, it's a long story what I was doing there. Anyway, I was down in Lima, Peru, and woke up. I was awakened at 2 o'clock in the morning by a bomb going off a block away from where I was staying. It was right down by the presidential palace, and the. Something luminosa, the shining path. I don't remember their name in Spanish. Had just set off this bomb. I mean, that was the beginning of the insurgency. This must have been 1980, 79, 80, something like that. And when we were putting together a program in the barrio in the La Paz slum in Bogota, Colombia. I was within blocks of bombs going off two or three different times. And I remember being in England when I wasn't there when one of the IRA bombs went off, but I arrived the day after. And, you know, that part of, as I recall, it was in Kensington, was all, you know, partitioned off. And it was, you know, it was one of those bombs in a trash can kind of thing. And it's interesting how some countries, and of course I've been in Israel when these kind of things have happened, it's interesting how some countries respond to this by saying, well, okay, we've got, you know, we got a problem, we got to deal with it. You know, we'll do what it takes to deal with the problem. And life goes on. I mean, it was very much the situation in England, for example. And other countries deal with these kind of problems by going into hysterics and slashing civil liberties and just you know, going on the attack, you know, not just the attack against the terrorists, but using the terror attacks as excuses to do all kinds of things. I mean, this is what was going on in Colombia, you know, just naked power grabs going on within the government and jockeying for power and who's going to get the money and trying to bring the U.S. into the thing and all this stuff. So that's frankly, I think, the biggest concern. And the question that a lot of people are asking is, will the Bush administration exploit future terror attacks if they happen, God forbid, in the United States for political gain the way that they have exploited past ones? Or might we begin to actually deal with some of these issues in a practical and appropriate way? Not to say that they're not altogether. Certainly, you know, some good first steps have been made, but our ports are not secure. Our first responders, our police and fire, their budgets are being cut. Bill Clinton put 100,000 police officers on the streets. George Bush repealed that. Right on down the line. If it benefits Halliburton, we've been throwing money at it. And I know it sounds like I'm speaking facetiously, but I'm not. I mean, if it benefits Halliburton, we throw money at it. If it benefits big defense contractors, we are there. But money for local communities has not been forthcoming. It's certainly not at the levels at which the local community. I mean, you hear all these folks yelling on TV and the radio. You know, local politicians over the last couple of days going to Orange Alert means now they've got all these overtime bills to pay again. And in all, you know, if this administration with their plans to eliminate 900,000 unionized government employee jobs are any indication, probably their response is, well, you know, why are you paying these guys overtime? Just, you know, outsource the work to a corporation that won't have a union, and then you won't have to pay overtime, and you can get some desperate Walmart folks, you know, people who would otherwise have to work at Walmart to work there for maybe 50 cents an hour more, and you won't have health care, you know, and you can cut your budgets. I'm going to get into that a little bit today. The whole situation of the change in the United States, the economic change in the United States, the difference between now and 30, 40 years ago, and what brought that about? How, you know, what role does George Bush play in this? What role does Bill Clinton play in this? And it's a substantial one, by the way. Which reminds me, we are seeing right now this battle for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party. And it's fascinating to watch. There's been all these conservative theorists who have been suggesting that there is this Hillary faction, this Clinton faction, let's say, that is preparing Hillary Clinton to run for president in 2008 and therefore didn't want somebody who actually might win to run in 2004. And therefore, when Howard Dean started looking like he was getting some traction and that he actually might even have a possibility of beating George Bush, that they convinced Wesley Clark that he should jump into the race. And now they're orchestrating all these attacks on Dean and all this sort of thing. And, you know, I had originally written that stuff off as right-wing conspiracy nut stuff, but it's increasingly looking to me like there is some, if not a substantial amount of truth to it. And it's, you know, there's a real battle going on within the Democratic Party. And now the media is getting into the act because, you know, a week or so ago, Howard Dean said that if he's elected president, he's going to break up the big media outlets. Well, boom, that was, you know, that you can drop a small nuclear bomb at General Electric. I mean, that really shook him up. And, you know, Dean, I have a feeling, you know, I haven't seen any positive coverage of him. I mean, since then in the national media, it has all been, Lots and lots of coverage of the people who are attacking him. If you attack Dean, you are guaranteed FaceTime on TV. But his responses and the people who support him, they have vanished. They have vanished. Which brings us to Ralph Nader. You see today in the Washington Post, Ralph Nader's the guy who ran his presidential campaign in California, Ross Mirkarimi, says Ralph Nader is not going to run as the Green Party candidate, that he's spending today calling folks and letting them know that he's not going to run. The Green Party, of course, had split itself essentially into three factions. There were those who said, hey, we need to be, you know, do what Ralph Nader did 2 years ago and get out there, in 2000. We need to get out there and just, you know, fight this battle as hard as we can and try and get as many votes as we can. And, of course, we know, you know, the results, you know, for example, in Florida, where Bush supposedly won by 537 votes, that reversed when they actually did the recount, but nonetheless. Nader won 97,488 votes in that state, and no Green is ever going to convince me that 600 of those people weren't Democrats who would have voted Democratically otherwise. Sorry. I will acknowledge the fact that a lot of people voted Green because prior to that they were not voting at all, but not all 97,000. And anyhow, it's so here we got here we have Ralph Nader saying that he's not going to. Oh, the three factions of the Green Party. Number one, they wanted to run the strongest possible campaign and try and, you know, basically, even if it means playing the spoiler role again, do it. The second faction, which was led by David Cobb, and David may now end up the nominee for the Green Party for president, which I think would be great. David is a good guy. He will run a good campaign. He's got a lot of integrity, a lot of honesty. Very, you know, and he's committed, as is that faction within the Green Party, to running a strong campaign, state by state, in those states where it's either absolutely certain the Democrats don't have a chance, or it's absolutely certain the Democrats are going to win. But in any of the swing states, those states where it could go Democratic or Republican, the Greens will not participate in those states, and they'll encourage people to vote Democratic. Because it is just so important that we stop, that we reverse this slide into corporatism that this administration is driving this country off the edge of the cliff. And then the third faction within the Green Party just don't even want to run a presidential candidate this year, or in this coming election year. And, you know, it's been kind of an internal battle, but now Nader has said, nope, not going to run. Wouldn't be prudent. Actually, what Nader apparently has said, and I don't know if the Green Party is going to take this as a slap, but this, according to the guy who ran his presidential campaign in California, Ross Mirkarimi, he says, and I quote from the Washington Post, my understanding, quoting him in the Washington Post, my understanding is that if Nader runs, he does not want to run a mediocre campaign. And that he would run the most serious campaign possible to unseat George Bush, end quote. Well, of course, number one, that's not going to happen. I mean, it's not by Ralph Nader. It's an unfortunate reality that we don't have proportional representation in the United States, and instant runoff voting has not spread across the nation. But it is a reality, and we're stuck with that two-party system that James Madison warned us about. Back in the Federalist Papers. But anyhow, so here we have it. So is Nader not going to run because he doesn't want to run a mediocre campaign because that would be a Green campaign? It seems that that's what he's saying, because in the same breath he says that Nader is considering making an independent run for the presidency. Interesting. And this guy says he thinks, yeah, this is the mistake on Ralph Nader's part. But, it, you know, it's... How's this going to play out? I don't know. It's going to make for a much tighter race. I mean, if the simple reality is, if Ralph Nader had not been in the race in the last election, in all probability, Al Gore would have been president during the last 4 years, regardless of the Supreme Court, regardless of Kathleen Harris and Jeb Bush's successful efforts to rig the vote in Florida and to disenfranchise Black voters in Florida. Regardless of all of that, Gore would have won. And so now, you know, it's Can Dean pick up those Gore voters? Will people come back to the Democratic well? I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
And tonight's winning jackpot numbers are, Jane, would you do the honors?
17, 6, 39, and...
Oh, cut. You sound awful.
Oh, my nose is runny. Head's all blocked up. I need my Alka-Seltzer Plus.
Only Alka-Seltzer Plus has an effervescent formula that breaks up nasal congestion and relieves your worst cold symptoms fast.
And the numbers are, Jane...
17, 6, 39, and 75.
Alka-Seltzer Plus breaks up your worst cold symptoms fast.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817. The Washington Monthly.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference. About the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Are you stressed because you haven't gotten all of your Christmas shopping done? Well, get the toy that all the kids with mentally disturbed parents find under their tree. The Captured Saddam Doll.
Wow!
The Captured Saddam Doll comes with the long-haired drugged Saddam, his spider hole, and all the crap in it.
I can't believe it.
Each doll comes with its own body odor.
Woo, stinky!
Not one doll smells the same. Order within the next 10 minutes, and you'll also get the mini letters sent to Saddam telling him to stay in that damn hole until we need you.
Neat.
These dolls will only be available for a short time, so act now.
I want a Captured Saddam doll for Christmas, Dad.
So do I, son. So call 1-800-MARKET-OUR-WAY to a second term now and order your Captured Saddam doll for only $199.95. Order two Captured Saddam dolls and get a Go AWOL and still get in the White House for Dummies book free. Brainwash your kids this year and get the Captured Saddam doll today.
Customers must like playing war games on PlayStation 2 and playing with action figures like our Commander-in-Chief or pay an extra tax of $2,000 per doll. Supplies are limited. Order today.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal Narwhal. Talk. We talk Australia. About what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network. Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Fireback.
Zebra.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
I look out at the winter sky. It's gray and overcast. Another year has flown right by. These days, they go so fast.
It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. The Czech Republic, an Associated Press news story from Czechoslovakia, or what's now called the Czech Republic. Labor unions in the Czech Republic demanded Monday that stores stop playing Christmas carols incessantly. And if they don't, they must pay compensation for causing emotional trauma to clerks. Well, it's a little different than an occasional bumper music Christmas carol. Some stores play the same songs all day and play them loudly, says the AP. Employees say shifts have become unbearable. To listen to it for 8 hours a day is not healthy, that's for sure, says Alexander Leiner, a union leader. And for the customers, it's almost unbearable as well. Leiner said unions have written to major chains and demanded that employees be compensated. He said the unions want $19 or 2 days off. Apparently $19 is what you earn for 2 days of work in a Czech store. As possible compensation, they've received no response from the stores. I mentioned in the last segment talking about Ralph Nader and the United States and all this sort of thing, instant runoff voting and proportional representation. And it occurred to me that not everybody who's listening has been listening to every single show every single day for the last year that we've been doing this. And so just a quick explanation. When the United States was first put together in 1787, the Constitutional Convention, there were all these compromises and debates, and they were trying to figure out how to make a democracy work. They had the problem of big states and little states. They solved that with a bicameral legislature. We have both a House and a Senate. And the House, the number of members that you have in the House of Representatives, each state has, the House of Representatives gets bigger and smaller as time goes by. It's gotten mostly bigger because it represents the number, the population. If you get more people, you get more members. On the other hand, at least from the viewpoint of the states. On the other hand, the Senate, each state has two senators, period, regardless of its size. So little tiny Delaware has two senators, little Vermont has two senators, but little Vermont only has one congressman, that's Bernie Sanders, whereas New York State has a whole bunch of them. So that was one compromise. But that was about as close as they got to anything that resembled proportional representation. Proportional representation was a concept that the British political philosopher and writer John Stuart Mill came up with, and member of Parliament ultimately, John Stuart Mill came up with in 1847, as I recall. It might have been 43, but anyhow, in the 1840s, just before the American Civil War, or in the generation before that, he came up with this idea that wrote about it at length, that if you were going to have political parties forming, that those parties, that what people should do is vote, instead of voting for the individual, they should vote for the party, knowing the candidates that the party is going to put forth. And that way, if you've got a third of the people in favor of the Green Party, then a third of the representatives in Parliament are selected by the Green Party. And they, so you're voting your philosophy, as it were. And if one-tenth of the people are members of the Progressive Party, or, one-twentieth of our members of the Conservative Party, then everybody gets represented. And then in order to get together a majority to elect the Prime Minister, which is done by the members of Parliament, they have to form coalitions. They have to cut deals. I mean, Ariel Sharon, as I recall, only has his party, the Likud Party, I think has 23% of the parliament in Israel. It's the same thing with Tony Blair. He's in the 20 or 30% region. I'd have to go back and check those numbers. But so that's how that works. And we, our system of government was already cast in stone before the idea occurred to anybody. So we have a system that really only allows for two parties. And, like it or not, that's what we have. And so progressives' duty is to infiltrate the Democrats and take them over. That's my thinking on it. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here now and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
Hi, this is Ron Metzinger, Director of Affiliate Relations at IE America Radio Network, hoping you and your family have a happy holiday.
states are moving ahead on energy reform, and Minnesota is one of the leaders. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Critics say the federal government has done little to promote solar, wind, and other renewable energy sources, but a number of states are making progress. Minnesota is a leading example, according to David Morris of the nonprofit Institute for Local Self-Reliance in Minneapolis.
Minnesota gets 10% of its transportation fuel from inside of Minnesota from crops.
That renewable fuel is ethanol, and Morris says most of it comes from farmer-owned cooperatives, so the state's farm economy benefits from the cleaner-burning fuel. Minnesota has also passed what's called a renewable portfolio standard. It requires electric utilities to produce a growing share of their power from renewable sources such as wind.
And we have established a renewable portfolio standard, so we expect to double and triple the amount of wind-generated electricity that will be coming out of the western part of Minnesota in the next couple of years. And we have passed incentives such that we encourage local ownership.
Morris says farmers don't just lease part of their land to the utilities like they do in most other states.
In Minnesota, those farmers are owning those wind turbines, and they're getting twice as much because they're owning it, and after 10 years when the system is paid off, they will get 25 times as much in terms of revenue.
Morris credits Minnesota for being a leader on renewable energy, but he says there's lots more to do. His organization is pushing for tax incentives to boost cleaner cars, greener buildings, and other ways to cut energy waste and promote renewable sources. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, this is Suzanne Cowardy.
I'm El Bracciotti, the famous mariachi.
Whatever.
This is Renee Scarponi.
Hey, baby.
This is Kim Kasnick.
Yeah, baby.
This is John Lucas.
Hey! This is Stephanie Stryker.
Yeah, bud!
This is Steve Damshutter.
This is Shaw Jones.
This is Bill Vellner.
Yeah!
Hi, this is Ron Metzinger.
From our family to yours, have
a happy holiday and a great new year.
Isn't that just too cute?
I like Santa Claus!
I'm Michael.
I'm Ellen.
And we're the Cooking Couple.
Join us every Sunday from noon to 2 Eastern Time right here for the Cooking Couple Show.
Where we serve you food with attitude plus a heap and helping of humor. It's all about food, family, and fun.
So tune in every Sunday from noon to 2 for nutrition, fitness, innovative products, consumer tips, and entertainment options for the whole family.
It's the Cooking Couple Show. And when the Cooking Couple cook, we do it on all four burners.
It's food with attitude.
Chop suey, chow mein, young one, tofu, and you.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. And yes, Pace Cop, we can see you now. If you drop in, go to TomHartman.com and click the link to the chat room, and you'll see a great bunch of people who are having a fantastic, fascinating conversation. We're broadcasting now live coast to coast on the IE America Radio Network. Also streaming from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, radio systems, Sirius channel 145, stream 145, and broadcasting, beaming around the planet on the internet, radiopower.org, with listeners now documented in 91 countries. I think the last I heard from Shelby, well over 10,000 listeners. And IEAmericaRadio.com. Just live365.com. By the way, if you're listening to radiopower.org, be sure to click on the donation link there and keep them going. And with archives at whiterosesociety.org. You can find it all at TomHartmann.com, including archives of past shows, not just the 3 week archive on WhiteRoseSociety.org, but also an archive of shows by topic. Instant runoff voting. Just real quickly, I'll recap this, and then we've got a call, David in San Francisco, but hang on just a second, David. I want to get this out. Instant runoff voting is a very straightforward system that has been adopted by many communities in the United States. A variation of it has been adopted at a national level in Australia, because Australia had adopted much of this, you know, first past the post, winner take all type of election that we have, which requires or inflicts on its people basically a two-party system. There's no room for a third party. See, the problem, the irony of our system is that when a third party emerges, it will always hurt the party most closely aligned to it. And whereas with instant runoff voting or proportional representation, that third party will help the party most closely aligned to it, which makes sense. I mean, that's how a democracy should work. And so with instant runoff voting, you vote for your first choice and also for your second choice. So, for example, in the last election, if I had voted for Ralph Nader as my first choice and for Al Gore as my second choice, and Ralph Nader didn't win and wasn't the number one loser, in other words, he wasn't first or second, then my second choice vote, my Al Gore vote, would have become considered as my vote. And, it's a very straightforward process. It works very simply, very very clean, and helps elections, in my opinion. It helps democracy. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. On this week before Christmas, this week of Christmas, we have David in San Francisco on California on the line. Hey, David, welcome to the Tom Hartmann program.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Let's see, have I heard Steve Hill interviewed on your show before on the instant runoff voting?
Not to the best of my knowledge. I don't know who he is.
Oh, he's pretty much the most active proponent of it. He's the one here in San Francisco that he's been working nationwide on getting it in a variety of different cities and counties. But he's the one that essentially got it on the ballot and got it passed for San Francisco. And frankly, Matt Gonzalez would have been our mayor if it hadn't been for some shenanigans. We voted instant runoff voting in 2 years ago, and it was mandated for the election of we had a November election, so it was mandated for the November election, but Mayor Willie Brown was able to with his cronies in the state house, they were able to create a sort of a special investigation of it, and they put it off until what our next election will be, something like March of next year. So instant runoff voting is a very, very intelligent idea. Instead of holding your nose and voting for the person that you think will win, you can rank, if you've got 10 people running, you'll typically have a count of who's your absolute favorite, you put them as number one. Who's your second favorite, number two. Who's your third favorite, number three. And so you just chart them out, in terms of...
Yeah. So what happened there? I mean,
in San Francisco?
Well, yeah, this is for the city of San Francisco. You guys voted in that you wanted IRV.
What was that again?
I said in San Francisco, you guys voted in that you wanted instant runoff voting, and then didn't get it.
Oh, yeah, it's in our city charter now, and it should have been, by charter, it should have been implemented a month and a half ago, and Willie Brown was able to essentially, because Willie Brown is the mayor now, he was able to play with the financing of it, and he was able to play with the elections board. He ran through a couple of different... There was a lot of corruption in the Board of Elections.
Yeah, this is corruption in politics is not limited to Republicans.
Absolutely,
by any means. And Matt Gonzalez is a really good guy. I mean, I'm familiar with his politics and particularly his issues on corporate personhood. He's one of the most enlightened politicians in America in those issues. But
well, right.
Anyway, is that what you call
about,
David?
I hear the music coming up. Are you about to do an ad? Or
no.
Do I hear music?
I think you're hallucinating.
I'm hearing angels. Well, I was going to say, Ross Mercurimi was Matt's campaign manager in this most recent run-through. And I'm I just happened to read the Washington Post article as I was waiting on hold here, and to me, I think the article is written in a kind of an incendiary way, in almost intended to insult Greens and to make them angry with Nader. I think far from it. He's, you know, there may be some sort of an actual quote in which he wants to run a viable campaign, but seeing the success that Ross had with this most recent one, I think that, you know, we've got a very effective team of people who were very well trained in this most recent election. We've had
why not work for David Cobb? I mean, why do you have to have Ralph Nader? Number one, and number two, it's just that he's got no name recognition.
I'll tell you, last year I ran Nader's campaign in '96 with another guy, and we had to run it as a non-affiliated PAC, which is very difficult. A non-affiliated political action committee can have no contact with Nader, and Nader could have no contact with us. Yet we ran a pretty effective campaign. Then in 2000, I worked on the Green Party outreach, so I didn't work directly with the campaign for Nader. What I worked for or worked
yeah,
with.
David, let me interrupt you here. Don't you think that Ralph Nader went out, you know, licked a finger, put it up to the wind, talked to a few people, and got it that so many people are so angry about the kind of damage that the Bush administration is doing to the environment? They're, you know, 7 out of 8 of their actions with regard to the Endangered Species Act have been against the Endangered Species Act. They're gutting the Environmental Protection Act. They're trying to throw 800,000 public worker government employees out of their unions. They've declared war. It's the Walmartization of America, and they're destroying our civil liberties. This president tried to say that he could throw any American citizen in jail with no access to even a lawyer, much less due process, and people are just so angry about this that they're saying, Ralph, you get in the way of our getting this guy out of town, and we're going to burn your butt. I mean, it's just, you know, I think that he was just experiencing intense heat to stay out of this
thing. Well, like death threats, probably. I wouldn't doubt
that. Well, I don't think that. I mean, we all get that. I mean, you know, anybody in the media gets, you know, I get death threats. I don't think that Ralph Nader takes that seriously. But I think that the issue is that people just, they're not going to smile and go, oh, cool, let's work for Ralph this time. No, they're going to be angry at him. And he got it.
What I was leading up to a moment ago was that when you were recommending working with Cobb, what I did in 2000 was to develop outreach. We had 4 candidates who were running in the primary. One was Stephen Gaskin, famous hippie, so to
speak.
Yeah,
the farm.
Gaskin's farm. There was the punk rocker Jello Biafra. There was
David, I don't have time for the whole list of candidates.
Joel Koval was
what's the point?
A professor. And Ralph Nader were running. So what any campaign, whether it's the Democrats, Republicans, whatever, you know, they run their front runners, and then there's always a B string of people who need to get the name recognition for a succeeding election year. So Cobb is obviously someone who's very bright. He's in a big state, the big state of Texas, and if he's got some name recognition down there, and maybe in Oklahoma and a few surrounding states, he'll do better. And as we're talking, you know, David Cobb, look for him. You know, it's good to get his name recognition out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, David in San Francisco, got it. And thank you for the call. I appreciate you sharing that. And yeah, David Cobb, you know, if the Green Party itself has name recognition, and you know, it's, we'll see what happens. But Ralph is apparently history. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, it's Rudolph, Ralph, that's close, I suppose. This interesting thing. Did you know just a quick digression into a Christmas story, as it were. The Norwegians had the indigenous people of Norway. There's a tribe up there whose name escapes me at the moment. But in any case, they as most tribes do. And old tribes did. They would take hallucinogens, and the one that they took was the Amanita muscaria mushroom. This is a red mushroom with white spots. And the problem is, you eat this mushroom, and it'll kill you because it's hepatotoxic. It'll whack your liver. And but reindeer, they would herd the reindeer around to eat the mushroom, And the reindeer's livers would metabolize the poison, but their kidneys would pass through the hallucinogen, the drug, and then the reindeer would pee, and the shaman would go around and gather up the yellow snow and make it into a soup or a brew or something. The drug is called muscimol, and they would have the vision of flying through the air, as is common among shaman taking psychedelics in indigenous societies. And thus we have this lore of this guy who's dressed in red and white like the mushroom. And one of the more common hallucinations with dimethyltryptamine-containing drugs, which apparently Amanita has, are seeing little people. And so you see these elves. You've got these little elves who are helping out. And the reindeer taking you on these flying through the sky. So therefore, that's Rudolph's red nose and Rudolph's the whole thing is an old story left over from shamanic days. It's fascinating how much of this stuff just kind of makes its way in. Bush Cheney, GeorgeWBush.com, sent me an email today. In my last email, I told you wealthy liberals led by billionaire George Soros plan to spend $400 million to defeat President Bush. They keep telling me this. They keep sending me these emails. I have yet to see it anywhere. Does anybody know of any wealthy liberals who have said that they're going to devote $400 million to defeating George Bush? This is, as far as I can tell, just a number out of thin air. Now comes word that Soros and his anti-war allies are soliciting foreign money to use against President Bush. And they're all in a lather, and they've got this picture here. 450,000 grassroots contributors they're trying to round up versus George Soros' $25 million to defeat our president. Contribute today. Our conservative alert. Muammar Gaddafi. This story is getting more and more interesting as the facts are coming out. The decision by Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi to permit UN weapons inspectors into his country validates the argument, according to the Center for American Progress, that the United States can achieve its strategic international goals using tools other than military force, namely diplomatic, political, and economic pressure. People say, but Gaddafi did this because he was afraid he would be attacked like Iraq is attacked. Well, there are others who say, we are so thinly spread in Iraq and we are in the middle of such a mess that pretty much anyone in the Middle East is saying, these guys are not going to repeat this mistake. Although maybe we would. Maybe we would. But the evidence is quite clear that there are a couple of interesting coincidences here that have to do with Gaddafi. I think the main one is that the oil leases. World Market Analysis newsletter reports that the Libyan deal coincides with the expiration of a 50-year lease signed between U.S. oil companies and the Libyan regime. In other words, the U.S. oil companies' access to Libyan oil, Libya is still pumping 1 million barrels a day of oil, was about to expire. Specifically, the Oasis Group, which includes Marathon and ConocoPhillips, both major political campaign contributors to the Bush administration, they hold leases on the Waha oil fields in Libya. With the lease now expiring, quote, Libya has made veiled suggestions that it could retender the fields to European oil companies, arousing anger in the Bush administration, end quote. As a ConocoPhillips spokesperson confirmed to the Wall Street Journal, quote, our return to active participation in the Waha oil field area remains dependent upon further authorization from the U.S. government, which is now, of course, forthcoming. So it looks like this is a move that has been promoted by the oil industry. In fact, you go back and you look. Vice President Dick Cheney has long lobbied on behalf of the oil industry to lift sanctions on Libya. In 1996, Cheney was attacking our sanctions on Libya. He said, and I quote, there seems to be an assumption that somehow we know what's best for everybody else and that we are going to use our economic clout to get everyone else to live the way we would like, end quote. Speaking of Libya and our sanctions, he was CEO of Halliburton at the time. Cheney, in fact, the Journal of Commerce on May 6, 1996, said Cheney, Halliburton's chief executive, has publicly slammed the sanctions. End quote. But it gets even more interesting than that. I'll share this May 1997 Cheney quote with you in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting. We'll be right back.
This holiday, don't just give a gift, give the good life. And if you still haven't found the perfect gift, then come find it at Sears. Right now, get special savings on hundreds of gift ideas. All TVs, DVD players, and camcorders are on sale. And all fine jewelry is 40 to 60% off. Help him build the ultimate workshop with a great selection of Craftsman tools on sale. And with all treadmills on sale, start the new year off right. So come into Sears today. It's never too late to give the good life. Sears, good life, great price. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Find us online at Sears.com. Sale dates 12/21 through 12/24.
And tonight's winning jackpot numbers are... Jane, would you do the honors?
17, 6, 39, and...
Oh, cut. You sound awful.
Oh, my nose is runny. Head's all blocked up. I need my Alka-Seltzer Plus.
Only Alka-Seltzer Plus has an effervescent formula that breaks up nasal congestion and relieves your worst cold symptoms fast.
And the numbers are... Jane?
17, 6, 39, and 75.
Alka-Seltzer Plus breaks up your worst cold symptoms fast.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Handy Dave Rush here, inviting you to listen to Home Improvement USA. Ken Walchek from Chicago's number one hardware store, Clark Devon Hardware, John Seip from United Marketing Force, Jay Brentlinger from Orban, and, of course, Danny Lipford from today's Homeowner Television Show, take your home improvement questions. Our guests include industry experts from across the country. We've been America's most useful talk show for 10 years, so join us for Home Improvement USA every Saturday, 2 to 4 Eastern, and rebroadcast 8 to 10 Eastern right here on IE America Radio Network.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Are you stressed because you haven't gotten all your Christmas shopping done? Well, get the toy that all the kids with mentally disturbed parents find under their tree. The Captured Saddam Doll.
Wow!
The Captured Saddam Doll comes with the long-haired drugged Saddam, his spider hole, and all the crap in it.
I can't believe it.
Each doll comes with its own body odor.
Woo, stinky!
Not one doll smells the same. Order within the next 10 minutes, and you'll also get the mini letters sent to Saddam telling him to stay in that damn hole until we need you.
Neat!
These dolls will only be available for a short time, so act now.
I want to capture Saddam down for Christmas, Dad.
So do I, son. So call 1-800-MARKET-OUR-WAY to a second term now and order your captured Saddam doll for only $199.95. Order two captured Saddam dolls and get a Go AWOL and still get in the White House for Dummies book free. Brainwash your kids this year and get the captured Saddam doll today.
Customers must like playing war games on PlayStation 2 and playing with action figures like our Commander-in-Chief or pay an extra tax of $2,000 per doll. Supplies are limited. Order today.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I was making my way through the wasteland. The road into town passes through. I was changing the radio station with my mind on.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the pill that will help you escape the matrix. In January of 1997, Dick Cheney criticized Congress. He was CEO of Halliburton for tightening sanctions on Libya and specifically said the oil industry had a right to do business with countries in deadly who had deadly weapons of mass destruction. As the Oil and Gas Journal reported in May of 1997, quote, Cheney said oil and gas companies must explore where the reserves are, and that means doing business in countries that have policies that the U.S. does not like. Cheney went on to say, the long-term horizon of the oil industry is at odds with the short-term nature of politics. End quote. The next year, Cheney ratcheted up his campaign, once again criticizing the U.S. security policy on foreign soil, according to Malaysian news agency. Quote, Cheney hit out as his government for imposing economic sanctions like the Iran-Libya Sanctions Act, end quote. He told the state news agency on a visit there in Malaysia that U.S. sanctions on Libya are, quote, ineffective, did not produce the desired results, and are bad policy, end quote. Of course, his company would have done well if Libya was opened up to exploration, if those leases could be exploited by the American oil companies, because Halliburton is one of the companies that works with American oil companies in helping them extract that oil. And it looks like they will soon be doing it again. Yes, indeed, they will be back in Libya. And Dick Cheney will once again be happy. In fact, yesterday, Reuters, Libya will welcome back U.S. oil companies eager to return to their abandoned operation should Washington lift sanctions against it. Libyan Foreign Minister Mohamed Aberdane Kalkhem told reporters on Monday. He said, quote, we currently produce 1.5 million barrels per day, and we aim to increase the oil output to 3 million barrels per day in 2020. Now, that's more. I mean, Iraq is only producing, at its peak, Iraq was producing around 2 billion of barrels a day. Five U.S. firms were active in Libya before sanctions in 1986, including Marathon Oil Company, Hess, ConocoPhillips, Occidental Petroleum, and Grace Petroleum. And the spokesman for Occidental says, we've made no secret that we would be very interested in returning to Libya if permitted, and it looks like the oil industry got its Christmas wish. Isn't that sweet? Merry Christmas, American Oil Company. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network in the real free speech zone. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news. From the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dogs?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Therese Dolittle, to talk to the animals. And you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All the need is love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
Work. Who says Mike Malloy is rational? And, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why not put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles. According to court documents, an investigation centers on whether Rush Limbaugh engaged in doctor shopping, a felony that involves getting multiple prescriptions from several doctors that could not have been received from just one. In court documents, investigators say Limbaugh obtained about 2,000 pills during 5 months, sometimes getting multiple prescriptions less than a month apart. Earlier this month, prosecutors executed search warrants to seize Limbaugh's medical records from two doctors and argued that the records are relevant and necessary to an ongoing investigation into how Limbaugh obtained painkillers. Howard Dean punched back Sunday at his Democratic rivals who have been stepping up their attacks on the former Vermont governor. At a high school, Dean amplified on a comment he made that the nation was not safer after the capture of Saddam Hussein, a remark criticized by his rivals. Dean said America is still not safer because the Bush administration is lacking an inspection program for cargo, missed an opportunity to buy enriched uranium stockpiles of former Soviet states, and allowed North Korea to become a nuclear power. Dean said the raising of the threat level to orange on Sunday proved his point. Authorities raised the terrorist threat assessment over the weekend after some new intelligence indicated that operatives of Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda terror network, possibly trained and licensed to fly passenger jets, may now be pilots for some foreign airlines, ideally positioning them to carry out suicide attacks, U.S. officials said on Monday. Reinforced cockpit doors intended to thwart hijackers after the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks would now protect any terrorist pilot at the controls, the officials said, on condition of anonymity. The capture of Saddam Hussein had a minimal effect on George W. Bush's approval ratings, which are hovering at their lowest levels since he took office in January 2001, according to a poll. The Harris poll, conducted before and after the ousted Iraqi leader's capture on December 13th, found only a slight improvement in Bush's ratings, up from 48% positive, 51% negative, to 50% positive, 49% negative. More news after this.
I'm Arthur Davis. You may have a serious eye condition and not even know it. Vision loss is not a normal part of aging. Some vision changes are normal. Some are due to eye disease. Do you know the difference? Open your eyes to the facts. To get more information about vision and aging, or find out about what help is available if you're having vision problems, call Lighthouse International at 1-800-829-0500 or visit www.lighthouse.org.
A long-haired gray cat rode unseen in the engine compartment of a female college student's car as she drove home for the holidays. Officials at Pontiac, Michigan's Animal Rescue League, the feline's current home, say it probably survived the 150-mile trip in the Chevrolet Tracker because the woman did not stop. Now, named Tracker, a Russian Blue Angora mixed breed who emerged from his experience unscathed, may have slipped into the engine compartment to keep warm. The woman and her family searched around the car for the crying noises. When they finally lifted the hood, they found a cat sitting on top of the engine. This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
This holiday, don't just give a gift, give the good life. And if you still haven't found the perfect gift, then come find it at Sears. Right now, get special savings on hundreds of gift ideas. All TVs, DVD players, and camcorders are on sale. And all fine jewelry is 40 to 60% off. Help him build the ultimate workshop with a great selection of Craftsman tools on sale. And with all treadmills on sale, start the new year off right. So come into Sears today. It's never too late to give the good life. Sears, good life, great price. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Find us online at Sears.com. Sale dates 12/21 through 12/24.
There's bad news and good news on the electronic voting machine front. Let's get the bad news out of the way first. Yet another study has found that these touchscreen machines are loaded with security flaws that open our elections to fraudulent manipulation, either by the owners and programmers of the machines or by partisan hackers. The state of Ohio commissioned a study of the vote tallying computers of the four biggest corporations in this new and rapidly expanding industry, and the researchers found not one or two problems, but 57. Among the little hiccups was the discovery that the computers could be tricked to count the votes of any particular machine many times over, thus perverting the election. Another found that outsiders could hack into the system on election day and close down selected machines. People would still be voting on these machines, but their votes would not get counted. Ready for a little good news? Let's hear it for California Secretary of State Kevin Shelley. Based on the findings of a public task force, he has now decided that all electronic voting machines used in his state must print out a paper receipt, verifying the ballot of every voter and creating a paper trail that election officials can review if a recount is called. Instead of having to trust the manipulative world of corporate-owned cyberspace, Californians will have their votes counted in real space. The only hickey on Shelley's decision is that he postpones implementation to the 2006 election. Why not next year, when we're electing a president? The paper technology already exists, so let's do it now. Still, his move is a huge step toward voting integrity, and other states will likely follow suit. This is Jim Hightower saying, meanwhile, the national bill to require a paper trail by next year's election, H.R. 2239, now has 82 co-sponsors, including three top Republicans. To help pass it, contact this website, verifiedvoting.org.
I get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Here's Nancy in the background. Nancy.
Oh,
hey, Nancy.
Am I on the air?
Oh. Hello.
Hello.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You're in the Democracy Zone here on Talk Radio for the rest of us. We were talking in the last hour. One story out of many. Just mentioned quickly that in the Washington Post, this article today, Nader rejects Green Party backing, and quoted Ross Mercurimi saying that my understanding is that Ralph runs. He does not want to run a mediocre campaign and is trying to assess the political and resource variables on how he would run the most serious campaign possible to unseat George Bush. And so Ross has called the show. Ross, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you.
So what provoked your call?
Well, because I got about a half a dozen phone calls from people that said, you're talking about this article, which I hadn't even seen yet, and had mentioned, I guess, my quote. So I was eager to get the Washington Post and thought I'd call you in.
Okay, great. Well, it's wonderful to know we have that many listeners in San Francisco. Tell me what's going on here with Ralph.
Well, I think first things first, now that I've been able to see the Post article, I think the Post is doing its best to be very divisive in trying to conjure up, internal as well as external conundrums for the Green Party. I think that headline is extremely misleading. I think what it says, in essence, is that, you know, Ralph Nader has tried to give, through a presidential exploratory committee, due diligence in whether he wants to run as a Green or run at all. And that I think that if the Greens and Nader are able to come together, or were able to come together and decide what kind of campaign that they could run collectively, then you'd probably see Mr. Nader running as a Green. But in this case, I think he's just decided at this point to run as an independent. It's kind of a surprise to many of us, but to many, it might not be a surprise who are on the inside.
We had a caller from San Francisco, David, who brought this up, and my take, my guess on it, and you're on the inside, you can validate this or set me straight, was that Nader probably went out, checked with, you know, a fair number of people about, hey, what do you think about my running? And a lot of them got a lot of blowback, got a lot of, you know, a lot of people who are very concerned that getting George Bush out is almost more important than who gets in. Do you think that that's possible?
I think that that's a variable, a strong variable. I think that's on the minds of certainly the Green Party and progressives throughout the United States. But concurrently, it's also important to the Green Party that if we run somebody for president, that it is used as a vehicle to help build the party. We saw considerable growth and recognition of the Green Party in many localities around the country that helped really strengthen the Green Party's influence as a result of the 2000 presidential race. And that's a strategy we, as a party nationally, I think, like to take very seriously. And it's under consideration right now what is the best strategic approach in the 2004 race.
Yeah, because nationally, the Green Party has been doing wonderfully. And you know, we need to be aggressively, and this is a point I made in the last hour, we need to be aggressively working for instant runoff voting in the United States. In local levels, it's happening, like in San Francisco, for example, but it has not happened in a big way at any on any state levels. I know the Green Party in Arizona is very active with this, but, you know, it hasn't happened. And certainly at the federal level, you've got a couple of presidential candidates who have somewhat come out and said that they're in favor of it, basically Kucinich and Dean, as far as I know. You know, it's a long way down the road.
Exactly. And we feel that the only way that we're going to, you know, help educate the United States and the Democrat and Republican parties is to provide, you know, that kind of impact and push that envelope as to what the Green Party's muscle can feel like so that people understand that actions like adopting instant runoff voting and other issues that are mainstays of the Green Party, you know, if they're not going to be adopted or recognized and through the normal legislative course, then it's our job as a political party to push the envelope as hard as we can.
I noticed that you said the Democrat Party. You know, the actual legal name of it is the Democratic Party, and the Republicans have gotten this, it's like the in thing, you know, it was one of Newt's ideas to kind of diss them by calling it the Democrat Party rather than the Democratic Party because sounds too favorable.
That might have been a Freudian slip. I just came out of a very interesting mayoral contest here in San Francisco. I helped direct the campaign of Matt Gonzalez, who ran for mayor, and we just barely lost by 2 percentage points or so.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Matt, by the way.
Oh, great. Wonderful. And so we witnessed the mighty hand of the Democratic Party, where they had outspent us at least 10-1, not including their soft money, which probably ups it to 15-1. And they also had to import DNC consultants from D.C. and Sacramento, as well as bring in Al Gore, Bill Clinton, Jesse Jackson, et cetera. And still, we were able to come within 2 percentage points. In fact, we won more votes on Election Day than our opponent had. It was the absentees where we seemed to have some room to grow with, as political tacticians would think. And,
Ross Mercurini,
that's probably what you sensed,
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to get in the habit of pointing it out to people because it's this pernicious thing. It's like, you know, it's dissing at a subconscious level. And so anyhow, just to wrap this up, Ross.
Well, regarding the Nader thing, I think that it presents new challenges to the Green Party. We have wonderful candidates who may be less high profile, but I believe whose intentions are extremely sound, who will be vying for the nomination.
I think a brilliant guy, and I would encourage anybody to work for him and vote for him, for example.
Right. And I agree. That's an example of the kind of quality of candidates that we're putting out there. And then I think it's, you know, probably heartbreaking, but somewhat of a watershed for Nader to come to this moment. You know, he'll either have to run a strong campaign as an independent is my projection, or he probably won't run at all. And I think the question is, how can you run a strong campaign?
Right. Yeah. It's not possible. I mean, there's no apparatus there. He can't use the tools that he has of the organizations that he's created, the nonprofits in Washington D.C. because it's not part of their purpose. You know, their stated purpose. He really needs a party. So I don't think it's going to happen. But Ross, thanks for the call.
All right. You take care.
And thanks for being with us. Yeah. Do good today. Halliburton units cites pressure to set fuel deals. You know, this Henry Waxman has been taking Halliburton apart for months now, criticizing them for overcharging the U.S. taxpayers just massively for gasoline. Halliburton has been charging you and me. See, charging you and me $2.27 a gallon for gasoline that they get in Kuwait. Whereas anybody importing gasoline from Turkey is bringing it in for $1.18 a gallon. And the situation, of course, is that in order to keep the Iraqi people from getting too upset, we're bringing gasoline into the country and selling it to them for 5 to 15 cents a gallon. We buy it in Kuwait for $2.27, or Halliburton buys it in Kuwait for $2.27. They charge us that plus their markup. Their government, you know, no-bid guaranteed profitability markup. I mean, whatever happened to there being a risk associated with doing business? Well, there's no risk if you're doing business with the Bush administration if you are buddies with the Bush administration. So anyhow, they've been marking this stuff up, and a lot of people in Congress are really upset that the United States is getting ripped off. So now Halliburton has come out and said that the reason that they're ripping us off is because they were told to do it by somebody in the Bush administration. That they were told, well, here, I'll share part of this. This is in yesterday's Wall Street Journal. A senior Halliburton company official overseeing the company's $1.2 billion contract to deliver fuel into Iraq said he and his staff were subject to undue pressure from U.S. Embassy and Kuwaiti government officials to purchase gasoline from Kuwait as a political favor, despite concerns that doing so was more expensive than purchasing Turkish supplies. Thomas A. Crum, the CEO, Chief Operating Officer, COO for Kellogg Brown and Roots Middle East Government Operations, said in an interview, "There's been considerable pressure here on our people from the embassy encouraging us to buy as much fuel as we can from Kuwait, telling us it's a political issue." Now, wasn't one of the rationales that the cons have historically used to move government functions into private corporate hands that they would then be immune to the corruption that comes with being associated with politics? In other words, the United States government could just as easily buy the oil and ship it. We are not without resources. We could, I mean, for that matter, we could lease. I mean, there's no shortage of fuel trucking. And for that matter, Halliburton is not the one doing the fuel supplying. They hired a Kuwaiti subcontractor. They're just skimming money off the top. They're setting up the deal and skimming the money. It's just like yesterday, Putin said he would forgive part of the debt, part of the American debt, or part of the Russian debt to Iraq. And in exchange for that, he wants to be able to have this oil contract that he had with Iraq before we took out Saddam. He wants to have that contract, you know, revisited. In other words, he wants to be able to drill for oil, extract oil, pump oil, and sell oil out of Iraq and make a profit on it, as he was expecting before we attacked Iraq. And we said, okay, cool, you can do that. But wait a minute. We're not letting Russian contractors come into Iraq because they weren't part of the coalition of the willing. Well, it's no problem, say the folks in the administration. The Russians can subcontract. So if $1 billion worth of oil is being extracted by the Russians, we'll just let them run it through Halliburton, who will charge the Russians $1.1 billion. Halliburton pockets $100 million. Probably going to be much more than that. I mean, it's unlikely it's going to be, well, who knows. In any case, Halliburton pockets the change, and Russia gets their oil and their contract and their ability to make money. Everybody's happy. The campaign donors to the Bush administration, they're making out. The Russians are making out. But what happened to the idea that government should be acting on behalf of the people who are funding it? We, the taxpayers, we the ones who are paying Halliburton right now to buy this oil and sell it to the Iraqi people for 15 cents a gallon. What happened to that? Well, apparently with the Bush administration, that has gone by the wayside. That is history. Ethical business deals? No, it's all about who profits. That's the bottom line for these guys. This is not the kind of democracy that I believe the majority of Americans want. It is not the kind of democracy that we need in this country. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
And tonight's winning jackpot numbers are... Jane, would you do the honors?
17, 6, 39, and...
Oh, cut. You sound awful.
Oh, my nose is runny. Head's all blocked up. I need my Alka-Seltzer Plus.
Only Alka-Seltzer Plus has an effervescent formula that breaks up nasal congestion and relieves your worst cold symptoms fast.
And the numbers are, Jane?
17, 6, 39, and 75.
Alka-Seltzer Plus breaks up your worst cold symptoms fast.
I had a bad headache. I tried Advil Liquigels. They work faster than Tylenol.
I needed stronger medicine, and Advil Liquigels get that medicine to my headache faster.
I get better relief with Advil Liquigels.
Every day, more people are choosing Advil Liquigels to relieve tough headache pain. Advil has these advanced capsules with liquid medicine inside to rush relief where you need it. Proven faster, stronger, better than Tylenol.
Now, every time I get a tough headache, I choose Advil Liquigels.
For better headache relief, advance to Advil.
Wish I could watch some TV. If only my couch wasn't 43,000 feet away.
When you're in bed with the flu, the smallest distance can seem impossible.
If only the medicine cabinet wasn't way across the state line.
If only. If only you had the strength. You need Advil Flu and Body Ache. The power of Advil so nothing works harder on body aches, headaches, and fever. Plus a hard-working decongestant. Makes having the flu a lot more comfortable.
Now, if only I had a plasma TV.
Fight the flu with Advil Flu and Body Ache. Use as directed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
The Tom Hartman Show.
We have Bob in Texas. It's called Bob. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
You know, it's just wonderful to hear your show. I got the Sirius Satellite Radio because of this channel, and your show is worth every cent of it.
Well, thank you.
It's really nice to hear a radio show that, for one thing, you don't have to throw things at, you know, after a little while. You're talking about ideas and about historical context of what's going on, and that's so important. You don't hear this kind of intellectual, this level of thought anywhere else on the radio, and I sure appreciate it. But the big thing I keep worrying about is I think Al Franken's right in that we've been taking it and we've been taking it, and they've slimed us for so many years, and we can't take it anymore.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
It's the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Do we want an America dominated by fear, violence, and an economic caste system? Or do we want an America at peace and with a broad and successful middle class? Increasingly, we are seeing that the former is the agenda being embraced by the conservative agenda, by the cons in our government and outside our government who are driving foreign policy and domestic policy, by the Walmarts and their advocates of the nation, of the world, and this New World Order that George Herbert Walker Bush introduced us to and that Bill Clinton ratified when he signed NAFTA and the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trades, GATT, and brought us the World Trade Organization. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Brian in Manchester, New Hampshire, is on the line. Hey, Brian, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
How you doing? Happy holidays. Merry Christmas to you, Doctor.
Well, thank you.
And the same
back at you.
Okay, thank you, sir. I wanted to speak quickly, first of all, to the Green Party man that was just on there, your guest. That I think it's wonderful. I salute the evolutionary-minded people of San Francisco that the Green Party came within 2 percentage points of winning the mayoral race there. But I would like to tell the Green Party people out there, all you fine people, that if that millionaire Ralph Nader, that so-called Washington outsider, if he runs again, I think the left in this country could be politically and perhaps physically destroyed if we give another 4 years to this current elected, quote-unquote, administration.
Yes, I would agree with you, Brian, if I thought that Nader still had any potency left, but I don't think he does. I think if Nader ran again, he would get 1/100 of 1% of the vote. I mean, I just think he would be massively ignored.
He's a very good rhetorician. He's very good at convincing you of when he gets his time. He wouldn't get much air time, on the major electronic television networks, but he. When he does, he makes his points very well. Like Dennis,
he's a good guy, and he makes And these are important issues that he and the Greens are working for. But I think that American and by saying that, I didn't mean to put down the Greens.
No.
What I'm saying is, I think Americans are just freaked out, particularly anybody who might vote Democratic, and they are just so freaked out that they're going to go for who's electable, not who's the most noble here.
Yeah, I hope so. But also, I want to say that I want to salute the real forces that captured Saddam were the Patriotic Union of Kurdistan forces that actually captured him, according to there's all the online sources, all from the news from Australia. It's like we're living in a different planet, the news we get.
All over Europe. I mean, all the European newspapers are talking about the PUK and how they not only did they capture him, but they captured him several months ago.
Here's this according to KurdishMedia.com, it said an intelligence unit led by a senior PUK official and accompanied by a group of U.S. soldiers, found the former Iraqi leader in his birthplace of Tikrit, namely that farmhouse where they
found him. Well, that was an announcement. In fact, I read that on the air yesterday, Brian.
Yeah.
That was an announcement that they had published before the word was out in the American media.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our big media has said nothing about that. We're living on a different planet than the rest of the world.
Well, the rationale is that if we acknowledge that the Kurds caught Saddam, that will cause the Sunni Muslims in the north of Iraq to go nuts and start killing the Kurds in the extreme north of Iraq, which has happened before.
So
we're saying that it's going to cause a civil war. I'm skeptical of that claim. I think it's just that Bush wants to take credit for this thing. But that's the cover story that's out. That's why they say that they're not allowing the Kurds to take credit for it. Brian, thanks for raising the issue, though. Thanks for bringing it up. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
Hi, this is Shar Jones, Operations Department for IE America Radio Network. Please be safe this holiday season and have a happy new year.
States are moving ahead on energy reform, and Minnesota is one of the leaders. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Critics say the federal government has done little to promote solar, wind, and other renewable energy sources, but a number of states are making progress. Minnesota is a leading example, according to David Morris of the nonprofit Institute for Local Self-Reliance in Minneapolis.
Minnesota gets 10% of its transportation fuel from inside of Minnesota from crops.
That renewable fuel is ethanol, and Morris says most of it comes from farmer-owned cooperatives, so the state's farm economy benefits from the cleaner-burning fuel. Minnesota has also passed what's called a renewable portfolio standard. It requires electric utilities to produce a growing share of their power from renewable sources such as wind.
And we have established a renewable portfolio standard, so we expect to double and triple the amount of wind-generated electricity that will be coming out of the western part of Minnesota in the next couple of years. And we have passed incentives such that we encourage local ownership.
Morris says farmers don't just lease part of their land to the utilities like they do in most other states.
In Minnesota, those farmers are owning those wind turbines, and they're getting twice as much because they're owning it, and after 10 years when the system is paid off, they will get 25 times as much in terms of revenue.
Morris credits Minnesota for being a leader on renewable energy, but he says there's lots more to do. His organization is pushing for tax incentives to boost cleaner cars, greener buildings, and other ways to cut energy waste and promote renewable sources. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with an important public service announcement about sleep deprivation. Many of you are not obtaining the 10 hours of nightly sleep necessary for true patriotic Americans like my husband Georgie because you're staying awake to listen to the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. This dangerous behavior puts you at risk of daytime blackouts, diminished worker productivity, ghastly hallucinations, and erectile dysfunction. So when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hold on.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, the Newsletter Factory, newsletterfactory.com, and the Organic Wine Company, ecowine.com. And please patronize our sponsors. We are so pleased to have them. This is Tom Hartman, and our kids are all coming back for the holiday season. My daughter Kinder is in the studio with us today. And let's see. Nice one, John. Say hello, Kendra. Okay. There you go. Okay, I don't know if that came through, but anyhow, pleased to have you here. Mary in Santa Fe is on the line. 1-800-TALK. Yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Hey, Mary, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, thank you for the welcome. I'm one of your regular listeners, and I do pay attention to your sponsorship I sent for the wine. And
isn't it great stuff?
Pardon me?
Isn't it great stuff?
Oh, yeah. And if you mention books like Dr. Zinn, I buy their books. Mm. But anyway, what I wanted to remind the people here in New Mexico that we have a caucus system this year. Mm. And it's February 3rd. And the last time to the latest date to register to vote, if you haven't, is December 30th, which is pretty soon.
Yeah.
And so
get out there today while you're doing your Christmas shopping and register to vote if you live in New Mexico.
Right.
And pretty much anywhere else. I mean, everybody should be registered to vote right now.
Mm-hmm. And also,
so you're New Mexico is one of those states that, you know, I think February 3rd is probably going to decide who's going to be the Democratic nominee.
You think so?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it certainly seems that way. I mean, you've got, what, 10 states that day going down?
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I believe so.
I was interested in the fellow from San Francisco talking about the write-off voting. And you know, I listened to Teresa Carey speaking last night from Fort Dodge.
Mm-hmm.
And is she a marvelous speaker? And what a spokesperson for the environment, for all the things that we care about.
Yeah.
And it kind of rearranged my order. If we had a write-off, and I'm for Kucinich, and then I would put Kerry, and then I would put Dean.
Yeah. It's actually called runoff, instant runoff voting.
Instant runoff,
right? But
okay.
Close enough. I understand what you mean. Uh-huh. Yeah, and that's great. And hopefully instant runoff voting can come to New Mexico, and you know, if you're politically active at all, and any of our listeners who are, this is something to whisper, maybe even shout loudly about to your elected representatives mm-hmm. when you talk to them is, hey, you know, what about IRV? It's called IRV. You can find just a pile of information on the Internet about it and groups that are working on it. Just plug in instant runoff voting or IRV into your favorite search engine and it'll all come up. And it really is a system that could save democracy or revitalize democracy in America. I think that you know, I mean, right now more than half of the potential voters are not voting, and even you know, half of the registered voters are not voting. We need to get these people back in, and I think IRV can do it. Mary, thank you for the call. I appreciate your calling in today. I want to shift gears here a little bit. It's really the same thing, but our question here for the day, do we want an America dominated by fear, violence, and an economic caste system, or peace and a broad middle class? And now, I'm suggesting, and I have been all along, of course, those of you who've been listening for a long time know, that there is a relationship between war and peace, on the one hand, and prosperity and poverty, on the other hand. That nations that one of the strongest elements for a peaceful nation is a strong middle class. And nations that have a strong middle class tend to be far more democratic than nations that don't. And under conservative economic policies and these take-no-prisoner politics and crony capitalism that the Bush administration has been practicing right from the get-go, that, you know, the started really in a big way in America with the Reagan administration. And even Bill Clinton put his toe into this one, but nothing to compare. You know, remember Roger, you know, Bill's brother and all this kind of thing. Or Billy, I mean, yeah. Well, Billy was Jimmy Carter's brother. I mean, look at the stuff that's coming out about Bush's brother with his divorce and his slimy business deals and all this stuff. And I mean, if this had been a Democrat, it just, well, I'm not even going to go there. I mean, but the point is that a strong middle class is essential to democracy, and that we had in the United States from the mid-1940s, as a direct consequence of Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal policies, very specific policies of using tariffs and trade policy to protect domestic industries that competed on the basis of labor. Number one, I mean, there's a whole bunch of different policies. Number two, making the government the employer of last resort, rather than having this situation that we have right now, where Alan Greenspan thinks that the job of the Fed is to make sure that there are always at least 6, no more than 8, no fewer than 6 million unemployed people in America. Why? Because at that rate of unemployment, you won't see what Greenspan refers to as wage inflation. People will be too afraid to unionize and get active. And it's just, you know, it's a terrible thing. And here we have, here's an article in the Federal Computer Week, FCW.com, Federal Computer Week publication. This from last week. The government's push to open federal jobs to competition. See, this is the spin they put on it. That handing the functions of the commons over to private corporations. See, you've got the commons. The commons are fire services, our police services, our water supply, our rights of way of our power systems, our transportation system, our highways, our roads. All of these things are the things that we all have in common, our education system. And we all agree we want to have these things. We want to have them in common. And the wealth, the accumulated wealth that all of these commons represent is there's a fiduciary responsibility, a responsibility to respect and care for that, which is where the word commonwealth comes from. In many states like Massachusetts, it's the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Why? Because it's a state that was created to protect the wealth represented by the commons, protect it and administer it and use it appropriately. And while that is not the purpose of government in a dictatorship, in a democracy, that is the purpose of government. Government is we the people protecting and appropriately using our collective, what we collectively own, our parks, our roads, our, you know, on and on it goes, and doing it for our benefit. Because it's ours. And the most important of the commons is also perhaps the most abstract, and that's why it's so easy for people to completely miss it. And it's so important that you get this and that you tell everybody you know about this. The most important of the commons is our government itself. It's not any particular building. It's not any particular person. It is the entire thing. Our government is the commons. We own it. And when it operates properly, it is us exercising our will over ourselves. That's the whole, I mean, we the people, I mean, that's the whole point of American democracy. It was the first government in 2,000 years since Athens fell, the first government in 2,000 years to say, we are going to give the power not to feudal lords, not to the rich, not to warlord kings, not to theocratic popes. We are going to give the power to the people. And we are going to rule ourselves. And now the conservatives have come along and they've said, you know, we'd like to have our hand on that commons pot. We'd like to suck up the oil underneath the land that is owned by we, the people in common, and not even pay for it. You know, the new energy bill says that the oil industry does not have to pay royalties to us. If they take our oil out of our public lands, they don't have to pay us for it. They just get to sell it for whatever they can sell it for and keep all the money themselves. It's the conservative way. And now this massive union busting. It's not just union busting. I mean, union busting is one aspect of it. And from the conservative point of view, it's like a nice positive side effect. But the main point is to convert as much of the public wealth into private wealth as possible. So you've got all these functions of government that are operated on a not-for-profit basis. Nobody is skimming money off the top. You know, everybody likes to complain about the DMV, for example, the Department of Motor Vehicles, but nobody is making a profit on it. People say, well, if they were making a profit, it would be more efficient. Nonsense. We know that Medicare, for example, runs on an average of 1% to 3% overhead, whereas private health insurance companies, for-profit health insurance companies, run on anywhere from 10% to 24% overhead. Why? You can't run on a 1% to 3% overhead like most government functions do and still pay 10% in dividends to your stockholders and still pay multi-million dollar salaries to your CEOs and still have corporate jets with gold fixtures in the bathroom and beds in them and valets and private cooks and corporate headquarters in incredible luxury and a fleet of corporate-owned cars. I mean, you just can't do it. But they call it competition. Let's let the private sector compete against the public sector. It's not competition, it's theft. But here's the story. The government's push to open federal jobs to competition could open as much as $70 billion in outsourcing opportunities to private firms. In other words, private for-profit companies will be able to lay their hands on $70 billion of your and my dollars. And they will be able to Walmartize those jobs and skim a profit off the top. Officials have estimated that almost 900,000 federal jobs could be suitable for outsourcing. And Bush administration officials have said they want agencies to open half of those to competition by September of 2004. Do you get this, my friends? How many jobs are going to be gone? How many decent paychecks are going to be destroyed? The middle class is being eviscerated. And it works tremendously to the benefit of the Walmarts of the world, of the wealthy investors of the United States. Yesterday, according to the Center for American Progress, more than 90,000 people who have been out of work for months lost their federal benefits. This is actually the day before yesterday, as the programs to aid the long-term unemployed expired. While many progressive lawmakers demanded Congress and the President extend the jobless benefits, both Congress and the President refused to extend the jobless benefits, and cutoffs began on December 21st, and they affect a broad swath of people. Well, maybe it's appropriate not to be paying unemployment benefits to people when they're not working anymore. Maybe welfare is just a bad idea. Maybe we just shouldn't support anybody who's in trouble in this country. I mean, maybe Tom DeLay is right. Do you think it's possible? Well, apparently Tom DeLay doesn't think so. Tom DeLay, who said right after 9/11, there's nothing more important in the face of a war than cutting taxes. He said there is, quote, no reason, end quote, to extend benefits to help those struggling Americans who are unemployed. However, at the same time, the House passed an extension. Under DeLay's supervision, the House of Representatives passed an extension for the temporary tax breaks designed to provide relief for corporations during the economic crisis. So corporations get unemployment insurance, but human beings don't. It's the conservative way. As the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities said, and I quote, the House approach implies that corporations need continued support amidst a still weak economy, but that laid-off workers do not. This is despite the fact that firms might not use their tax breaks to hire new workers. And we have seen quite clearly over the last 3 years that, by and large, they have not. Supply-side economics has been completely discredited. We have cranked up the supply end of the equation as hard and as far as anybody could imagine, taking interest rates down to levels that we haven't seen since World War II, almost to the point that they were at during the Great Depression. We have thrown more money at more. We have a disparity of wealth in the United States right now that is unrivaled since the Gilded Age, since the 1790s. The supply side is massive. We have pushed as much money into the wealthy few as you can imagine, and we have done it not only with the cash flowing around, we've done it by borrowing trillions from our children. You got that, Kendra? George Bush borrowed $55,000 in your name. You're going to have to pay it back someday. Good luck. And giving it to the wealthiest among us, the vast majority of it going to the wealthiest among us. And that has not brought us economic prosperity. Yes, the economic cycle is starting to turn. Of course, you drop $1 trillion into the pot and something's going to happen. But it's nothing compared to what would have happened if we had simply raised the minimum wage. Because then people would be spending it. I know so many people who have a lot of money who are just, you know, socking it away. I mean, that's what rich people do. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
Oh, Randy, it was a mistake bringing you to the Texas Yodel Off.
Prilosec, OTC.
Oh, boy. Well, at least we've helped lots of frequent heartburn sufferers with new Prilosec OTC. That one pill a day.
It little pill-io.
For 24 hours of zero heartburn.
One whole day.
Oh, it's possible with Prilosec OTC, and it starts working the very first day.
Hee-ho.
Now, if you could just stop that yodeling.
Prilosec OTC.
Use as directed for 14 days for frequent heartburn.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will. Thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights? Priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky.
We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference. About the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
DJs and talk radio, they're the ones who like to let their bumper music run. So since Brad started editing, well, it's been pretty good for a long time, but Brad Walrod has really found some great music for us. Thank you, Brad. This is Tom Hartman back with you on the IE America Radio Network about 3 minutes before the top of the hour. Somebody actually did the math on this. It was economy.com has it on their website. This group actually did the math, and they found that each dollar of new federal expenditures for unemployment compensation. In other words, if the government spends a dollar on unemployment, it generates $1.73 in the gross domestic product of the country. Now, you'd say, wait a minute, how does that happen? I mean, this is how Roosevelt got us out of the Great Depression with the WPA and things like this. How does that happen? Well, it's very simple. You give somebody a dollar, they go down to the local store, they buy something for a dollar, that store, that shopkeeper makes a profit on it. If it's a local business, now there's a problem. If it's a Walmart, for example, then the money all goes to Little Rock. But if it's a local business, then that shop owner has made a small profit on that dollar, and he takes that profit and he uses that money to buy something at another store, and it just kind of echoes down. And when you add up all those little echoes of the slices that are taken out of that dollar, and the way that those slices add to each other and accumulate, you end up with $1.73. On the other hand, when you give a corporation a dollar in a tax break, something very different happens. That corporation, that dollar in tax break for that corporation generates only 35 cents in an increase in gross domestic product. It's going to be saved. It's going to be used for things that money would have been used for anyway. It's not generating the same level, not anything close to the same level of economic activity. This is the demise of supply-side economics, friends. You are seeing the death of supply-side economics. George Bush Sr. was right. It is voodoo economics. And it's a voodoo that is sticking pins in the American body politic. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? I'd say no.
You've You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
What do you think I like about commuting with nature as much as I do being on the tractor as much time as I do or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer?
You're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
Howard Dean punched back Sunday at his Democratic rivals who have been stepping up their attacks on the former Vermont governor. At a high school, Dean amplified on a comment he made that the nation was not safer after the capture of Saddam Hussein, a remark criticized by his rivals. Dean said America is still not safer because the Bush administration is lacking an inspection program for cargo, missed an opportunity to buy enriched uranium stockpiles of former Soviet states, and allowed North Korea to become a nuclear power. Dean said the raising of the threat level to orange on Sunday proved his point. The capture of Saddam Hussein had a minimal effect on George W. Bush's approval ratings, which are hovering at their lowest levels since he took office in January 2001, according to a poll. The Harris poll, conducted before and after the ousted Iraqi leader's capture on December 13th, found only a slight improvement in Bush's ratings, up from 48% positive, 51% negative, to 50% positive, 49% negative. They were the worst monthly ratings Harris has reported for the president since the September 11th terrorist attacks of 2 years ago, and the highest negative rating since he took office. Authorities raised the terrorist threat assessment over the weekend after some new intelligence indicated that operatives of Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda terror network, possibly trained and licensed to fly passenger jets, may now be pilots for some foreign airlines, ideally positioning them to carry out suicide attacks, U.S. officials said on Monday. Reinforced cockpit doors intended to thwart hijackers after the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks would now protect any terrorist pilot at the controls, the officials said, on condition of anonymity. Authorities would not describe the terror threats in detail publicly, but the U.S. officials claimed that the threat alert would remain at orange or high through the end of January, which they said was an indication of its seriousness. Officials insisted that new intelligence indicates that al-Qaeda remains intent on attacking large gatherings of people with chemical or biological weapons. They said law enforcement agencies were looking closely at two rural locations, one in the east and the other in the southwest, that were believed to be high on the terrorist target list. More news after this.
Our national parks have always been there for us, standing as silent reminders of who we are and what it means to be an American. They are full of history, of memories, of majesty. But now these great American treasures need our help. I'm Richard Dreyfuss, asking you to help preserve America's national parks. Visit AmericansForNationalParks.org today, because there's just too much to lose.
This is a public service announcement from Americans for National Parks and this radio station.
A Spanish nuclear power station has been shut down indefinitely because of a small missing screw weighing just 4 to 5 grams that fell off a machine during refueling. The Zurita plant, located in the central Castilla-La Mancha region, cannot reopen until a full report on the screw is completed. Staff searched for the screw with cameras, but after failing to locate it on film, they concluded it must have slipped into an area of the reactor that was inaccessible to cameras, the spokesman said. This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
And we're back with Randy and Cecile on their way to tell everyone about new Prilosec OTC.
Hi, Mom!
Oh, Randy, stop. We just like to tell everyone that Prilosec OTC
starts working the very first day. That's one pill a day for 24 hours of zero heartburn. It's possible with Prilosec OTC.
Randy, what are you doing?
I'm hip. I'm cool. I'm DJ Randy Man.
Oh, dear, is this live?
Ow!
Use as directed for 14 days for frequent heartburn.
There's bad news and good news on the electronic voting machine front. Let's get the bad news out of the way first. Yet another study has found that these touchscreen machines are loaded with security flaws that open our elections to fraudulent manipulation, either by the owners and programmers of the machines or by partisan hackers. The state of Ohio commissioned a study of the vote-tallying computers of the four biggest corporations in this new and rapidly expanding industry, and the researchers found not one or two problems, but 57. Among the little hiccups was the discovery that the computers could be tricked to count the votes of any particular machine many times over, thus perverting the election. Another found that outsiders could hack into the system on election day and close down selected machines. People would still be voting on these machines, but their votes would not get counted. Ready for a little good news? Let's hear it for California Secretary of State Kevin Shelley. Based on the findings of a public task force, he has now decided that all electronic voting machines used in his state must print out a paper receipt, verifying the ballot of every voter and creating a paper trail that election officials can review if a recount is called. Instead of having to trust the manipulative world of corporate-owned cyberspace, Californians will have their votes counted in real space. The only hickey on Shelley's decision is that he postpones implementation to the 2006 election. Why not next year, when we're electing a president? The paper technology already exists, so let's do it now. Still, his move is a huge step toward voting integrity, and other states will likely follow suit. This is Jim Hightower saying, meanwhile, the national bill to require a paper trail by next year's election, H.R. 2239, now has 82 co-sponsors, including three top Republicans. To help pass it, contact this website, verifiedvoting.org.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy.
I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
Well,
a few more years.
No. I'm talking about now.
Like a tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back, friends. Welcome to the radio support group of By and For We the People. According to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, the states, now, see here, the results of conservative economic and social policies are becoming so conspicuous. I mean, it's just right out there for you to see. And they're doing the smoke and mirrors all, you know, hey, look at this war. Hey, look at this dictator. Hey, look at there. Yeah. But don't look behind the curtain at Alabama, Colorado, Florida, Maryland, Montana, or Utah. Please don't look at those states. We don't want you to know about what's going on in Montana, Florida, Maryland, Colorado, Utah, or Alabama. Why is that? Because those states have stopped enrolling eligible children in their state's children's health insurance programs. Why? Because they don't have the cash. Their budgets are crashing. Tens of thousands of children are being dropped from the insurance rolls. And hundreds of thousands of eligible children are not being picked up, even though they are fully eligible. The law says they should have access to this, and they are standing in line saying, I would like health benefits, and they are not getting them. Why? Because of conservative economic policies. This slash-and-burn tax cut for the rich that has eviscerated federal funding, and so many states, number one, are getting federal dollars back in block grants that they're not getting anymore. And number two, like Vermont, they tie their state taxes to federal taxes. I mean, in Vermont, basically how it works is whatever you pay in federal tax, you just take a percentage, a multiplier, and multiply times that, and that's what you pay in state tax. A lot of states do that. And so the states have seen their revenues collapse. At the same time that because the federal government is cutting back, they're not funding No Child Left Behind. They're requiring states to do things, and they're not giving them the money. And the core element of the No Child Left Behind program, which is that school districts that don't do well get less money, punish the poor. It shouldn't be called No Child Left Behind Act. It should be called the Punish the Poor Act. Punish the poor schools. That now, you know, local governments are going to are having to cough up more and more money to pay for the tests being sold to them by the buddies of the politicians, the corporations, the for-profit corporations that have gotten into the education business through the No Child Left Behind Act. In Florida, for example, 44,000 children as of last month who were eligible for the state insurance program for the poor, the Medicaid program, 44,000 eligible children were turned away because Jeb Bush said that although his state had enough money to cut taxes for the rich, they could not provide health insurance to five-year-olds. 10 states now are finding themselves in the same straits, and those are just the ones that are conspicuous. This is a national disgrace. And, you know, it's a multidimensional thing. In today's newspaper here in Vermont, here in the People's Republic of Vermont, there's an article by Daryl Allen of the Vermont Press Bureau. He says the Public Service Board, is the rate-setting board here for power rates. We do not have an entirely deregulated electric system in the state of Vermont. It is highly regulated by a government board that looks at, you see, the corporation, they have to open their books. They have to say, here's where we're spending our money, here's how we're making our profit, and then the rate-setting board gets to say, here's how much you can charge the taxpayers and ratepayers of the state of Vermont. And people go, oh, that's terrible, that's good government involvement. Well, see, the theory is that the electric is so important. Having electricity available is so important. I mean, if you don't have it, in the winter here in Vermont, if you don't have it, businesses, homes get destroyed. Pipes freeze. I mean, you're talking about billions of dollars in damage. If electricity, as happened a couple of years ago when the big ice storms hit up here. And so the government has said, this is so important, it is part of the commons. Yeah, we're going to allow some for-profit companies to participate in it and sell us electricity if they want to take the risk of building a plant. But the state actually owns some of these dams and power sources here in the state and operates them very well, thank you very much. And you'll notice, it didn't get a lot of publicity. I was surprised it didn't get more publicity. But when the big Northeast power failure happened because that company in Ohio that had been indicted for so many different, the company in Ohio crashed the power grid and all the Northeastern states went out. Remember the big one where they thought it was terrorists? New York City was shut down for a couple of days. Vermont never went down. We never lost our power. New Hampshire to the east of us went down. New York State to the west of us went down. Massachusetts to the south of us went down. Parts of Montreal to the north of us went down. If you looked at the map from outer space at night, it was really interesting. The whole northeastern United States, except for this little sliver that was the exact shape of the state of Vermont on a map, it was all dark, except for Vermont was still lit up. We're one of the few states left in the Northeast that has a public service board that determines how the power companies can conduct themselves. Anyhow, the public service board, in response to pressure from our new Republican governor, who became governor in this state not with a majority of the votes, but because the Progressive Party and the Democratic Party split something like 55% of the vote. And so with just a little over 40% of the vote, we got a Republican governor. And so he just cut a deal with IBM. IBM gets a $500,000 reduction in the electricity rate that they pay. And I, as a citizen, as a guy sitting here in his house, I get a 2% increase in my power bill. I suppose you could say that's the downside of government participating in markets, because if the government is corrupt or is corrupted by corporations, then you've got a mess. But, you know, if the government... See, the problem is that the corporations, number one, on the one hand, being able to corrupt government, or on the other hand, supplying the functions of government. Either way, you lose. Either way, the corporations win. We need to go back to a law that says that corporate lobbying is considered bribery and influencing, and it's a felony. It's against the law. As it was in the United States for the first 100 years of our existence, we need to go back to that. This is just wrong. That IBM can blackmail the state of Vermont by threatening to take jobs out of here. Because, you know, they put this thing based on if they can't have their employment rate fall below a certain threshold, or they're not going to get their discount. And the rest of us get to pay for it. It's pretty amazing. But it's not, I mean, this isn't just Vermont. I say this as an example. And we're seeing an interesting economic recovery. And get into that after this call here. A recovery for profits, but not for workers. The economy nationwide is doing something very strange. And it's not just happening here. It's happening in Germany as well. It's happening across the developed world. Why? I think we can track it back to something that happened in 1986. But first, let's take John's call. John in Long Beach, California has called 1-800-TALK-YES. 1-800-825-5937. John, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good morning, Tom.
Hey, John.
You can help me out here. What part of the Constitution, Bill of Rights, whatever, that says, "Oh, the people, for the people, by the people"?
That's actually a quote from Abraham Lincoln, and I believe it was in the Gettysburg Address, wasn't it?
Oh, I guess it was. But they're going to change.
Yeah, he said that this nation of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth.
Yeah, but they're going to change that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's going to be a government of the corporations, by the corporations, for the corporations.
Well, the cons are certainly, I mean, you know, we've got a foot and a half into that particular grave or whatever metaphor you want to use.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's what I saw the other day, and some, I don't know where it came from, I can't remember, the 49% of the blue-collar workers still support Bush.
Yeah, I wrote an article about that in Common Dreams that was published on Saturday. It's still up on their main homepage. It's called Conservatives Target Testicles.
When you've been brainwashed at birth, through certain things, not to question authority, whether it be a god or our parents or your boss, this is what happens.
Or your teacher. I mean, our schools are no longer teaching critical thinking skills, and this is a
problem.
Yeah, there's
no critical analytical thinking anymore, for the most part.
And I agree. Is that what you called about, John?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, I don't know. Like I told somebody the other day, I looked in down the tunnel, and all I saw was darkness.
Well, I don't see the darkness, John. First of all, let me just ask you: do you have any ideas about what, you know, if you could wave a magic wand, or if you were president for a week, what would you do?
Well, I think we have to go back to the old Roosevelt The Roosevelt liberals, then a liberal.
Mm-hmm. Liberal democracy.
Yeah, you know, and it's amazing to me how people squawk when somebody in need gets the money, but it's perfectly all right to give a corporation even more money when they don't need it. The prime example is when in 9/11, when the airlines got all the billions of dollars from the government, but the working people, people working for the airlines didn't.
Right. Well, it's just a classic example of the priorities of a conservative administration.
I can't hear you, Tom.
I said it's a classic example of the priorities of a conservative administration.
Yeah.
They could have protected the workers. They could have done both, but yeah. They instead just protected the corporation and the CEOs.
Well, like you said too, and whenever it happened that we made corporations escape corporations' personhood, that's when we really were on this slippery slope.
Yep, it's a problem. John, thank you for the call.
All right.
I appreciate your sharing. I always do. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. It's about 20 minutes after the hour, 19 and a quarter minutes after the hour. And the New York Times has an interesting piece, ran December 21st, 2 days ago, Recovery for Profit but Not for Workers by Louis Uchitel, I think. And talking about how profits have shot up as a percentage of national income, reaching their highest level since the mid-1960s, but labor's share has been shrinking. Let's take a look at this. This is a really interesting phenomenon. It has not happened in the United States since the 1890s. What's going on here? This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Tonight's winning jackpot numbers are... Jane, would you do the honors?
17, 6, 39, and...
Oh, cut. You sound awful.
Oh, my nose is runny. Head's all blocked up. I need my Alka-Seltzer Plus.
Only Alka-Seltzer Plus has an effervescent formula that breaks up nasal congestion and relieves your worst cold symptoms fast.
And the numbers are... Jane?
17, 6, 39, and 75.
Alka-Seltzer Plus breaks up your worst cold symptoms fast.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Kathy. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress for pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current,
we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
News without conflicts of global corporate interest. And we are back. You know, it's a, I'm going to digress for just a moment here because somebody in the chat room asked a question that I thought was a really good one during the breaks. I read what's going on in the chat room and occasionally participate. And the question Coach Glenn asked is, what's the biological function of depression? And this is a fascinating one, depression seems to be something that is pretty widespread in America right now. We have so many people out of work and so many people unemployed, and how do people break out of it? There was an interesting, and we've always treated depression like it was a disease, you know, that it was something to be cured, to be treated, to be fixed, to be gotten rid of, And there was a study, and this is in one of my books. I forget which one. I think it's in Beyond ADD, in which I cite all the research on this thing. So it's been about 5 or 6 years since I read this, so I don't have at the tip of my fingers the names of the scientists and things. But anyhow, there was this study that was done about 10 or 12 years ago where they wanted to, and it was following on Diane Fossey's observation that gorillas and chimpanzees seem to have about the same rate of clinical depression as human beings. About 10 to 15% of the population of the group at any given time was acting as if they were depressed. And the symptoms of depression were very similar. They didn't eat as well. They disengaged socially. They withdrew from the group. They didn't sleep well. They were hypervigilant. They were behaving like, you know, the sky's going to fall at any moment. And the question was why, and what would happen if the depressed ones were taken out of the society? So these researchers went over to Kenya, as I recall, and they found a group of chimpanzees, and they identified and they observed them for a while, and they identified the depressed ones, and they shot them with tranquilizer guns and pulled them out of the group and got out all the depressed monkeys, and they thought, okay, or chimpanzees, and they thought, okay, now what's going to happen, you know? And their guess was that the rest of the chimpanzees were going to have a party. They're going to, hey, let's boogie, you know, the bummer chimps are gone, the depressed ones are gone. Turns out what happened was that over the next 6 months, the entire troop, a group of chimpanzees is called a troop, the entire troop of chimpanzees died. They died. They were dead. And when they went back and looked at what was going on and why, it turns out that the depressed ones, because they were hypervigilant and because they had socially disengaged, withdrawn, they had withdrawn to the perimeter of the group. And they were hanging out in the trees, you know, and they were not sleeping well at night. And so they were the ones who noticed the predators approaching the group first. When a lion was trying to sneak up on them, or a tiger, or a boa constrictor, or whatever, it was the depressed ones who always sounded the warnings. And the woman who was the lead researcher in this study, in the summary on the study, she said, you know, you can see that it's very similar in human society. You look at the depressives among us, like Albert Camus or Franz Kafka or Ernest Hemingway, and in their writings, they're waving the flag and they're going, look out, danger, danger. I mean, go back and read The Prisoner by Franz Kafka. If you want to read, number one, something from the pen of somebody who is profoundly depressed, and two, who was warning us about the dangers of the rise of fascism in the world, of totalitarianism. And so there is some benefit to it societally. But individual, and also what they found was that the chimpanzees and monkeys took turns being depressed, just like humans do. It's episodic. It comes and goes. But the main way of breaking out of it for humans, I think Dr. Marty Seligman has come up with some of the, he wrote a book called Learned Optimism, that for anybody who is struggling with depression is my number one recommendation. It's a brilliant book. That and Dale Carnegie's How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. These two books are just filled with extraordinary techniques to deal with depression. That said, and come back from this break, we'll talk about the depression that's being caused by unemployment and the economic disaster, courtesy of George W. Bush, that America is experiencing. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, in just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is Kim Kasnick, office manager for IE America Radio Network, hoping you and your family have a happy holiday.
States are moving ahead on energy reform, and Minnesota is one of the leaders. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Critics say the federal government has done little to promote solar, wind, and other renewable energy sources, but a number of states are making progress. Minnesota is a leading example, according to David Morris of the nonprofit Institute for Local Self-Reliance in Minneapolis.
Minnesota gets 10% of its transportation fuel from inside of Minnesota from crops.
That renewable fuel is ethanol, and Morris says most of it comes from farmer-owned cooperatives, so the state's farm economy benefits from the cleaner-burning fuel. Minnesota has also passed what's called a renewable portfolio standard. It requires electric utilities to produce a growing share of their power from renewable sources such as wind.
And we have established a renewable portfolio standard, so we expect to double and triple the amount of wind-generated electricity that will be coming out of the western part of Minnesota in the next couple of years. And we have passed incentives such that we encourage local ownership.
Morris says farmers don't just lease part of their land to the utilities like they do in most other states.
In Minnesota, those farmers are owning those wind turbines, and they're getting twice as much because they're owning it, and after 10 years when the system is paid off, they will get 25 times as much in terms of revenue.
Morris credits Minnesota for being a leader on renewable energy, but he says there's lots more to do. His organization is pushing for tax incentives to boost cleaner cars, greener buildings, and other ways to cut energy waste and promote renewable sources. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
were young and your heart was an open book. You used to say, live and let live.
You know you did.
But if this ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in and cry, say live and let die.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison instead of right-wing think tanks in the RNC. Our program today brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, M-A-C-S, and the Newsletter Factory at www.newsletterfactory.com. Fine folks all. Glenn in our chat room brought up an interesting point that is worth just riffing on just a little bit here. He says there is an element of learned helplessness in the Republican strategy that is alerts where one can do nothing but worry. It's very stress-inducing. I mentioned Marty Seligman before the break. Martin Seligman has written a number of books. He's a brilliant researcher, one of the most profound thinkers and researchers in the field of depression and anxiety there is. I mean, his books are just incredible. He's got a new book out now. I forget the title of it. But I thought his book, Learned Helplessness, was just absolutely one of the best that I'd ever read, or Learned Optimism, rather. And he had done the original studies on learned helplessness. And the way that they did it was they took a dog and put him in it. There was these two boxes kind of side by side, and the partition between them was low enough that the dog could jump out of one into the other. And then they would like, you know, ring the bell and give the dog a shock. I mean, Pavlov had tried the ring the bell and give the dog food and taught that he could teach dogs to salivate. So Seligman's question was, you know, can we ring the bell and teach the dog to jump into the other side of the compartment? And they did. But then they had, and it worked. And then they had a control dog, because you got to have controls in these experiments, who just was held in a harness and subjected to the shock but couldn't leap out of the box. And then when they finished that short study where they taught them how to leap out of the box when they heard the bell and they, you know, with or without the shock, they discovered that the dog that had been restrained from leaving the shell, the dog that had been held back and couldn't jump out, that dog, when they rang the bell and gave it a shock, even when it wasn't held back, would simply sit there and take the shocks. Over and over, and it would whimper and whine and cry, but it never got up and moved to the other box, even though there was nothing to stop it from doing so. And Seligman named this, labeled this, learned helplessness. And what he found was that people learn, not just dogs, I mean, and his entire book, Learned Optimism, is based on how to unlearn helplessness. And what he found was that people learn helplessness. And the way that we learn helplessness is by being shocked, by being alarmed, by being worried, and not being able to do anything about it. If you don't feel that you have any control over your environment and your environment is threatening, then if a person feels that way, then they will become helpless. They will become progressively less active, less proactive, less willing to step out and do things. And that's why, number one, it's so dangerous, it's so destructive when progressives and liberals and people in the middle of the road, you know, just the vast radical middle, when we say things like, oh, you know, there's nothing we can do. Number one, it's wrong. Number two, what it leads to is learned helplessness. It destroys this personal, not just personal initiative at an intellectual level, but at a deep psychic and psychological level. It diminishes people's ability to be effective and to act. And, you know, without hope, without action, without being effective in acting, I mean, what's left? So we have to be out there. We have to be active. We have to be proactive. But it also, you know, the Glenn's point was with these terror alerts. We're going to scare you, but we're not going to tell you what you can do about it. We're going to scare you, but please don't do anything differently. It's as if somebody had read Martin Seligman's book, Learned Optimism, and had said, oh, that's interesting how he conditioned those dogs to just sit there and whimper and take it. Let's do that to the people of the United States. This is like a psychology experiment run amok. And the same thing is being done to our workers, to the labor force of America. As the New York Times reported on the 21st of December by Louis Uchitel, this article, A Recovery for Profits but Not for Workers, the economic recovery is distinctly unkind to workers. He goes on to point out, while profits have shot up as a percentage of national income, reaching their highest level since the mid-1960s, labor's share is shrinking. And they go on to point out the reasons for labor's poor showing are not hard to spot. The employment rolls are still smaller by 2.4 million jobs than they were at the recession's start in March of 2001. Those who are unemployed are also feeling the squeeze, particularly the 85 million people who hold office or factory jobs below the rank of supervisor or manager. Their average hourly wage is only up 3 cents since July. It's barely enough to keep up with inflation. As Dean Baker, an economist at the Center for Economic and Policy Research, said, we have never seen in the 40 years that we have, statistics presumably, this hourly wage survey, wage growth that has been this slow. And they point out that since the end of World War II until the late 1960s, productivity steadily rose, and along with it did both profits and the income of labor. But now what we're having is profits exploding and the income of labor going down. Again, back to quoting this New York Times article, pre-tax profits skyrocketed in the third quarter to nearly 30% of national income. And then he goes on to say, and this despite the rising costs of health insurance, pensions, and exercise stock options, all counted as labor income. In other words, your income as labor includes the cost of, you know, when they calculate the statistics, they throw in the cost of health insurance that your employer may pay for. They throw in the cost of pensions. They throw in the cost of exercise stock options. And even though health insurance has been going through the roof, what, 14% increase last year? Your net income has not been going up. Well, it means that your net income, that your income in dollars that you're receiving as your paycheck are actually going down. And then they summarize the article. Forecasters count on consumer spending to keep the expansion going. So far, consumers have performed admirably. But here's the catch. And this is a huge catch, because when this catches up with us, boy, are we in trouble. Consumers have performed admirably, drawing on mortgage refinancing, tax rebates, and heavy borrowing at low interest rates to pay their bills. Once these resources run out, and they are running out, rising labor income must fill the gap. Well, we're not seeing rising labor income. And if that gap doesn't get filled, what do you have? You have a crash. You have an economic disaster. This is what the cons are setting us up for. And we've been seeing it for 3 years. And it's just amazing to me how many people in America think that the Dow Jones Industrial Average has anything at all to do with the overall health of the economy. The wealth of the S&P 500 companies, for example, has anything to do with the economy of America. Yeah, there is a bit of a relationship there, but it is not the economy. That is the economy for people who invest for a living. That is not the economy for people who work for a living. They are two separate economies. This is Tom Hartman. It's 17 minutes before the hour here on the IE America Radio Network. And 1-800-TALK-YES is our number if you'd like to weigh in your thoughts on this. 1-800-825-5937. And Cecilia in Florida is on the line. Hey, Cecilia, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you. I love your show.
Thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful service to us all. I have a philosophical question for you. You know, the environment is my top issue, and then healthcare and education. But, you know, philosophically, I kind of wanted to pick your brain. When, with this administration's gutting of environmental regulations such as mercury and gutting of, you know, allowing the hog farmers to continue their pollution and all the particulate matter in the air, you know, causing major health problems and mm-hmm. Toxic waste and the whole nine yards, don't these people realize that they have family members, they have daughters and sons and nieces and nephews, and down the road, their own descendants will be at risk?
No, I really don't. Cecilia, I really don't think that they think that way, because what's happened in America now in the last 20 years, you know, basically since the Reagan Revolution, has been that a new landed gentry has arisen in America. And they live in walled communities. They live, you know, they don't, many of them don't even travel on commercial airlines. Private jets now are more common in the skies than ever before. And when they do, they travel first class. When, you know, their children go to private schools, very exclusive private schools. They go to private, you know, to the very top universities, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year in tuition costs. They have very effectively walled themselves in, and I really think that they can afford to buy the very best organic foods and things and do so proudly, and I really think that they perceive themselves as a class apart, and then they get their shills, you know, like the right wing talk show hosts to scream class warfare whenever anybody points that out.
Well, you know, at some point, you know, it is going to come back to haunt everybody. I mean, you know, there will be a point in time, and it is going on globally, where there is no clean water, there is no clean air, there will be no trees, there will be no animals, and you just wonder at what point do they stop and say, you know, this is the legacy that I'm leaving to my descendants, and it will come back to impact them. It will. There's no doubt about it.
What I think we're seeing here, Cecilia, is the playing out of a psychopathology, of a mental illness. There's a basic human need. You know, if you go back to Abraham Maslow and his hierarchy of human needs, we need safety, we need security, we need we need food and water, and you know, our basic human needs. And those aren't just wants; they are needs. So there is this core driving need for security. Well, in tribal societies and in small democracies, what you find is that what people do all day long when they work is they contribute to the security of everyone around them. You know, and there's everybody gets fed when the hunters go out and gather, you know, get something to eat, or when the gatherers go out and gather food. It goes to everybody. And so what everybody is doing, what everybody is participating in, is building the security of everybody. In our society, and that was in our society, I mean, that was the vision of Franklin Roosevelt, was that we're all in this together. I mean, that's the ideal of a liberal democracy. But the conservative vision is based on the idea that in our society, the most effective way to get security is to have wealth, is to have a lot of cash, and people get started on it and they get addicted to it. It's almost like gambling addiction. I mean, they just have to have more and more and more and more and more, and they're never quite feeling secure because there's that little voice in the back of their head that's telling them that what you just said is actually true, but they're not confronting the reality of it. And so they keep thinking, well, if I can just make another $1 million, if I can just make another $10 million, if I can just make another $100 million, then I'll be secure. And they never, number one, never get secure in the sense of actually feeling it in their guts, like, hey, I've arrived. And number two, in the process, they make all the rest of us less secure.
Well, you know, it will come back to haunt. I mean, somewhere down the road, their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren, their nieces and great-nieces and nephews, I mean, someday they will come back and say, what a mess my forefathers and mothers had left. And I you know, it just philosophically, it makes no sense to me. But then I guess I'm not a neocon.
Yeah, there you go. And that's it. Thanks, Celia.
Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you, and you too. And I thank you for the sentiments and for the call and the thoughts. Yeah, and it's absolutely so much the case. And it's not just the United States. I mean, what has happened is that when this conservative corporatist agenda. I mean, frankly, part of me is reluctant to even call it conservative, because there was a time in my life when I thought that, you know, the conservative philosophy actually had some merit to it. Back in the days when conservative used to mean somebody who is in favor of moving slowly and thinking things out. I mean, that's the old traditional definition of conservative, is people who are averse to change. It goes beyond conservative, although the people who have hijacked this, it's really a corporatist strategy. Put corporations above humans. But the corporatists don't want to call themselves corporatists, so they have infiltrated the conservative movement and hijacked it. And it's a sad thing for those, you know, I've had on this program a couple of conservative Republicans who are so horrified by what's going on and are speaking out. Republicans for the environment and Republicans against Bush and stuff like this. But in any case, here, this isn't just here. It's happening. It's happening all over the world, the corporate agenda. The Wall Street Journal yesterday, Germany maps a jobless recovery. The German government has hit on a new way to lower the country's unemployment rate. Tell the unemployed to stop looking for work. They're actually going out and finding people who are 58 years old or older and getting them to sign a form, who are on unemployment in Germany, and getting them to sign a form saying, I'm no longer looking for a job. And if they'll sign that form, then they continue to get their benefits, and the government can say that they're no longer unemployed. By doing this, they've dropped 30,000 people off their unemployment rolls, and it's just a naked political ploy by Schroeder and his Social Democratic Party. But, you know, they're having the same problem. The cons are there, too. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
And tonight's winning jackpot numbers are, Jane, would you do the honors?
17, 6, 39, and...
Oh, cut, you sound awful.
Oh, my nose is runny, head's all blocked up. I need my Alka-Seltzer Plus.
Only Alka-Seltzer Plus has an effervescent formula that breaks up nasal congestion and relieves your worst cold symptoms fast.
And the numbers are, Jane...
17, 6, 39, and 75.
Alka-Seltzer Plus breaks up your worst cold symptoms fast.
This holiday, don't just give a gift, give the good life. And if you still haven't found the perfect gift, then come find it at Sears. Right now, get special savings on hundreds of gift ideas. All TVs, DVD players, and camcorders are on sale. And all fine jewelry is 40 to 60% off. Help him build the ultimate workshop with a great selection of Craftsman tools on sale. And with all treadmills on sale, start the new year off right. So come into Sears today. It's never too late to give the good life. Sears, good life, great price. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Find us online at Sears.com. Sale dates 12/21 through 12/24.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The Mike Molloy Show.
According to the GAO report, many items needed to establish a laboratory for making biological warfare agents were being sold on the internet to the public from the Department of Defense's excess property inventory for pennies on the dollar. So the next time the Bush crime family says, well, it's time to invade, oh, let me close my eyes, spin me around, okay, let me point, Syria! Because they have weapons of mass destruction.
Ah, this is so much fun, spin me around again.
Iran!
Oh, I love this game! Uncle Dick, can I play this game so much?
The next time we do that, is it not incumbent upon us to ask where they got the equipment that they used to make weapons of mass destruction?
Fastag says $27 billion. It's yours for $1.29.
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
This is Mike Molloy with the IE America Radio Network. Want to know more about our talk shows and personalities but don't know where to look? Do you want to find out what guests are scheduled or what topics we'll be discussing on our programs? Would you like to participate in live chat or vote in interactive polls? All this and more is available at the IE America Radio website. Bookmark it, stop surfing, and get active. Visit www.ieamericaradio.com today.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The lamp is burning low upon my tabletop. Snow softly falling. The air still in the silence of my room. I hear your voice softly calling. If I could only have you near to breathe a sigh of.
And welcome back to Talk Radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our program today was engineered in Detroit by the extraordinary Shar Jones and the extraordinary John Lucas. And our music was edited in New York City by the extraordinary Brad Walrod. Our program produced by the extraordinary Louise Hartman. Our program helped out by the extraordinary Kendra Hartman here. Thanks to all the folks in the chat room for showing up and participating and hanging out with us this hour. Now, I want to share with you the actual numbers. This is from the Congressional Budget Office in an article by Paul Krugman in the New York Times a couple days ago. Between 1973 and 2000, the average real income of the bottom 90% of American taxpayers actually fell by 7%. Meanwhile, the income of the top 1%, this is between 1973 and 2000, the income of the top 1% rose by 148%. The income of the top 0.1% rose by 343%. And the income of the top 0.01% rose by 559%. Remember, 90% of American taxpayers actually fell by 7% during that period of time. As Paul Krugman says, the distribution of income in the United States has gone right back to Gilded Age levels of inequality. He goes on to point out that America was once a substantial intergenerational mobility, a place of substantial internet. Sons often did better than their fathers. A classic 1978 study found that among adult males whose fathers were in the bottom 25% of the population, 23% had made it to the top 25%. In other words, 30 years after the World War II, people could move up the ladder. Now that number has dropped to only 10%. Upward mobility has fallen drastically. Conservative economic policies, my friends, are the end of the American dream. It's time to end the rule of the conservatives in America and bring back a liberal democracy to the United States. This is Tom Hartman. Thanks for joining us today. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place.
It's coming from a field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
On Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows than you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees.